360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
And it is Friday morning. It is time for The Week That Was. And as always, a big morning lined up for you. And on the panel with us this morning, we've got Marie-Claire Boothby, who is the member for Brennan and also the opposition spokesperson, well, for various different portfolios. Good morning to you, Marie-Claire.
Good morning to everybody.
And we've got Kezia Purick, who is the independent member for Goyder. Good morning, Kezia.
Good morning, Katie. And good morning to everyone out in the rural area.
And we've got Natasha Files, the health minister. Good morning to you.
Morning, Wolfie. Morning, listeners.
And we are doing it live this morning from our boardroom so that we can socially distance a little bit better and make sure that we're following all the right rules. But we are indeed expecting these COVID restrictions to be lifted today. 9:30 is when the Chief Minister is going to be out holding that press conference. And we will go to the Chief Minister's press conference briefly live throughout the week that was, if the Health Minister Natasha Files can't give us any kind of scoop here now this morning. Are the restrictions lifting?
So Katie, we've done really, really well. We did see those two positive cases come through yesterday, but both of those individuals were in Howard Springs and have been for a considerable period of time, and certainly their infectious period, our health officials believe. So I can't see why, you know, it wouldn't be lifted. I understand the Chief Minister will be heading out very soon. We've certainly been working towards 1 o'clock today with lifting those restrictions.
So 1 o'clock today, it sounds like it's a goer. I think that's pretty much you've told us that yes, it is, without actually saying it.
So Katie, we put in place the restrictions to get through that replication cycle, and I think seeing those cases come yesterday highlights to us the importance and the need for, you know, the short, sharp lockdown. Look at what's happening in New South Wales, but the additional week of restrictions just to give us that confidence. We're fairly certain that everyone that had been a contact was in isolation, and we had been getting those negative tests, but those individuals yesterday had a couple of negative tests that then turned positive. So just for the community to understand, but we've been working towards lifting those restrictions, and we are hoping that the community has been looking forward to and working towards those restrictions being lifted.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it can't come soon enough, really.
That's right. And I think from what I've seen out in the rural area and shopping around and moving around, most people have been pretty good. In fact, I'd say the vast majority of people have been pretty good with the masks and trying to do the right thing. And, you know, at Woolworths at Coolinga, they've had young people at the door to make sure that you check in with the QR code. And most people have been pretty good. There's a few awful people that are rude to them. But by par, I think the Territory people have responded appropriately and positively. And I'm hoping it'll lift.
Yeah, I restrictions. Agree.
I think like everybody, we are looking forward to these restrictions being loosened for sure. Sadly, it hasn't been without its concerns and complexities. Like, I mean, we saw earlier in the week the crazy lines at Morara. And I think if you've had, you know, a 6-hour wait to try and get tested because there was some genuine fear, of course there was. And, you know, given that we'd had 12 months to prepare, those sorts of things, you know, really should have been nutted out by now. So, and even just, you know, we're going to cut several hours away from, you know, potentially having these restrictions lifted, and businesses are still quite worried about what's going to actually happen now because they haven't really been engaged
about
the process.
And that's been one of the major complaints from hospitality and the hotel industry is that the government doesn't give them any real time frame.
Running a business, you absolutely need
1 hour.
That time.
Last time it was 1 hour. They announced at 12 o'clock and then expected businesses, particularly cafe restaurants that serve food, there's a lot of prep time that's required.
Yeah, there is. And ordering, making sure you've got everything that you need as well.
Well, also to give people time to think, will I go out? Won't I go out? Am I prepared? I've got an old person with me. I don't really want to go out. So notice and good notice or timeframes, or at least give timeframes to industry, is critical by this government.
Well, we've had the timeframe of 1 o'clock today for the last week.
Even from hospitality, then they're still saying, well, we just need to know exactly what's going on.
So,
is it going ahead?
So the time frame that we've been working to is that the restrictions would lift at 1 o'clock today, and I don't know why the community also wouldn't be working towards that.
Well, I don't understand that, Minister, because it's still been really uncertain. I mean, there's never been any indication that it's going to be absolute that happens. But what businesses would have liked was that maybe there was a plan A, full restrictions lifted, maybe a plan B, this is what it looks like, and even a plan C, because businesses, they just keep going and they have to, you know, they've got to manage staff and get rosters sorted and get food, like you said, Katie.
Not to forget the weddings, because I had a wedding last Saturday that had to be postponed to this Saturday because of the number of people that invited. So, I mean, that's not a commercial activity, but that's a community activity and a social
activity.
Well, it is
a commercial activity too, Kezia.
Well, they did have to change caterers. Your good point. They did have to change caterers. So I just think the minister doesn't want to gazump the chief minister, but I reckon they're going to be lifted.
I reckon
one.
It will be too. And but look, like you said, there is those two cases of COVID which have been recorded in the Centre for National Resilience. So both of those, though, are those workers from the Tanami mine site who have been in quarantine since Saturday, the 26th of June. Now, I do want to say, though, there has unfortunately been a situation where we did see a business who broke the rules throughout the week. A Darwin business was shut down earlier in the week for multiple failures to comply with the chief health officer's directions. Now, this takeaway food outlet in Nightcliff was, well, it received a number of visits from the Territory Police during the past week, and police say that they've been given ample opportunity. They were given ample opportunity to follow those directions. I've got to say, I was certainly pretty surprised to see that that there was a business who, despite being warned, asked to do the right thing, warned, still went down that path.
Went against it, and I have no sympathy for them whatsoever. They put potentially the community at risk by not following what are the rules and the laws of the day. Every other business has stuck by the rules as much as it's hurt them commercially and personally. And I just hope they throw the book at them. I know they've got a massive fine of $20,000 or $25,000, and I don't know how or what they get charged with, but rightly so. And I say good on the police and good on the government. We set these rules to protect all the community, not just your little bloody souvlaki shop, you know, that stands out on its own.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. It's, you know, it runs the risk as well of sort of hindering other businesses. And I think that all along we've been very cautious of the impact that COVID is having on business. And the fact that when you go into a lockdown, it impacts a business for a whole week. You know, that whole week, it meant that businesses weren't able to operate. Our tourism operators were screaming, you know, like they really needed that tourism, and they were in a situation where they couldn't operate. It's about following the rules so that the whole community can benefit and come out of those restrictions sooner.
Katie, and this business, it wasn't that they weren't just not wearing masks, both staff and not enforcing that. They didn't even have the QR code check-in, and we only have to look at what New South Wales is going through in terms of, and I know how hard those contact traces worked in the Territory last week in, you know, bringing our situation under control. And if we don't have that information, it will see us in lockdown for 2, 3, 4 weeks. I mean, New South Wales has got at least 3 weeks, and professionals and clinical experts are saying that they'll be lucky to step out of that. So this new Delta strain is so transmissible. It just takes a moment of interaction, and it might be that the previous customer has been in the shop and has left the, you know, the virus, and you come in momentarily after that and gain it. That's why that QR code check-in is so important, and to blatantly not provide that for customers is really disappointing.
I mean, you must be pretty disappointed then as the health minister when something like that happens, when such a great deal of work has gone in. It must... Well, to put it pretty bluntly, piss you off.
So, you know, I think we've, you know, all got stories here of businesses that have done it really tough, that might have had bookings, significant bookings, tourism, significant hospitality bookings because it is the dry season, and lost out when we had to go into lockdown. But they accepted that what is hopefully short-term pain for the long-term gain of keeping our community safe. We also need to remember that this new variant, the interesting information, we had our health ministers meeting last night, all the states and territories in the Commonwealth. This new variant is putting people in hospital. It is putting them in intensive care. These people are younger. And so, you know, this is a very real threat to our community. And to blatantly ignore the rules because you don't feel like it is unacceptable.
I agree.
And at the end of the day, not everyone has been happy, and there's lots of worry about all of these things we're changing every single minute of every single day. But the law is there for a very real reason, and it is to protect people.
To protect the whole community.
Now, there is certainly the discussion is moving towards the vaccine really being the way out for Territorians, but also for Australians and around the world more generally. There is no doubt at the moment that Australia is lagging when it comes to the rate of vaccination. You'd have to say in the Territory, we're going fairly well at this point in time. Earlier in the week, we achieved that key milestone in the vaccine rollout with more than 100,000 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine administered across the Territory. It does mean 16.4% of Territorians are fully vaccinated. But right now, people can't book in.
So, Katie, it's up to 106,000, and over 17% of the Territory population is fully vaccinated. It was very useful information at the Health Minister's meeting reading last night from the federal health authorities, we absolutely will see that uptick of Pfizer during July, August and October. So we're just working. I've just come, which is why I was rushing in here from meetings with the health department. We're working through. We certainly, I know someone hit me up this morning at the coffee shop saying that they're really keen to get vaccinated but can't get that appointment. We put nearly 2,000 appointments up last week. That was, all filled up very quickly. We did have, with the appointments last week, shifting all those 50 to 59-year-olds across who were booked for AstraZeneca, giving them priority to get the Pfizer. But certainly we will have more bookings available in the coming days.
Like Minister, how many?
How many
are we thinking?
So that's what we're working through, Katie. How do we? So we know the supply that we the minimum supply that we are assured, and then there's the Commonwealth are hopeful that we'll get more supply than that. So we're just working through the numbers and how do we balance that booking out to make sure that we have both the first and second doses and that we don't let people down. But very much, people want to be vaccinated. And we want to offer those appointments. Sorry, Marika.
I was going to ask, is it a supply issue or is it the capacity of the clinics?
No, so the new Darwin Mass Vaccination Hub that we stood up this week, we'll do around 200 vaccinations a day, but we can go up to 800 vaccinations. And I'd like to give a shout out to the Italian Club, who have been absolutely wonderful. That facility, they've allowed health to go in there. We've taken that facility over with a lease, but we've been able to make modifications, and it's a really great facility out there. Mm. In terms of GPs are coming online, so there's 7 GP practices in the territory that are offering Pfizer. So you will see it more readily available through July, but certainly hear that message from Territorians that they just want to make the appointment and know it's done. Yeah.
We are going to take a very short break. You are, of course, listening to The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron. Your local lawyers are now also broadcasting on 8HA in Alice Springs.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to The Week That Was, now also broadcasting on 8HA in Alice Springs from midday. And this week, well, we certainly got a bit more of an opportunity to cover off on the situation with the ICAC report into the Darwin Turf Club grandstand. The Northern Territory's anti-corruption watchdog made findings of improper conduct against the Chief Minister's former Chief of Staff, 3 members of the Darwin Turf Club and a company director over the $12 million government grant for a new grandstand. Now, the Chief Minister came on the show a little bit earlier in the week and we asked him a lot of questions, really wondering why on earth the government ever, I think, thought that awarding this $12 million grandstand, or the $12 million for the grandstand, was a good idea to start off with. Now, we covered it extensively when the report came out. In fact, it came out on a Thursday. We covered it very extensively the following morning on The Week That Was.
That's right.
But just to give listeners some background, in June 2019, the Northern Territory government announced that $12 million of taxpayer dollars had been awarded to the Turf Club to build a new corporate grandstand at the Fanny Bay racetrack. Now, several months later, it emerged that the Turf Club's tender panel awarded the construction of the contract to a company co-owned by Mr. Brett Dixon, who's also the chair of the Turf Club. Following that decision, an NT government investigation and an independent auditor concluded, I should say, the decision to give the contract to JTEX Construction was above board. I mean, I think so many of us are asking at this point in time, how on earth did that happen? The Chief Minister saying that, you know, that the right information, or that they'd lied, basically, in terms of the information that was passed over throughout those investigations. But it just beggars belief to me that this happened, that it actually went to Cabinet without all the checks and balances and everything going through.
So it's an interesting. I did hear a little bit of that interview with the Chief Minister, which I thought was you were fine, but I thought the Chief Minister was pretty poor in his responses to your questions. And now he's saying, oh, the information that was given to us was lacking in substance. Well, a little bit too late, Chief Minister. You're telling me that you looked at a document, discussed a document, and you had no Treasury analysis of that document. Let's be clear here. I've never been part of Cabinet, but I'm pretty sure if a substantial grant application kind of thing goes before Cabinet, there'd be some analysis by Treasury officials, if not the Chief Minister's department.
Well, one would think so, wouldn't they?
So for the Chief Minister to come out and say, oh, they gave us wrong information, well, you're a bit of a dum-dum for not bloody asking questions at the time.
Katie,
it would have shown up as being a poor document
at all.
Some of them we did get answers to. He's not going to the Darwin Cup Carnival. We asked who took that Cabinet submission.
And he won't tell you.
No, well, he said that the responsibility stops with him. Now, we also caught up with Eva Lawler yesterday, and she said, well, the Chief Minister takes those Cabinet submissions to Cabinet. So I can only assume that it was him. Filesy, is that the case?
So, Katie, it was a capital grant, just to come back to Kezia's point, it was a capital grant awarded to the Turf Club. So as you get close, and I spoke to you about this earlier in the week as well, as you get close to the end of the financial year, you look at those projects to make, particularly with your infrastructure budget, because you get overs and unders. And so it was a grant. So in terms of your question, Kezia, it was a grant awarded, and there's a number of criteria to acquit that grant that they have to do. And we certainly asked questions, particularly when JTECs were issued with that tender, or they won that tender, and we were lied to. The department was lied to, who asked the questions, and the ICAC have got more teeth and went in there and was able to uncover that in terms of those processes around the awarding of the tender.
But so who took it to Cabinet?
But hang on, there was a swag of Labor Party people involved in this lobbying. There was Paul Henderson involved, there was Sid Sterling involved, and goodness knows else who was involved, putting together business cases. I understand that the Master Builders had some small input into, you know, the project, because obviously it was a big construction project. So Labor's been all over this from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, those two, I mean, I don't know about Sid Sterling, but previous Chief Minister Paul Henderson is definitely in the business of lobbying and assisting businesses. So no doubt he would have had discussions with the Chief Minister's office. So this, Labor's been all over this project from the beginning.
So, Falsey, who took it to Cabinet? Was it the Chief Minister?
So, Katie, I don't remember in terms of that specific grant.
I just can't understand why no one seems to know.
I think we should just say the Chief Minister took it to Cabinet.
And he has said that he is 100% responsible for this, and yet he still continues to blame everybody else. I mean, Minister, you've just blamed the department just now.
No, I just said that they asked questions about the, because we were very concerned when the tender was awarded to JTECs and the Department of Business went in and asked questions, and they were misled, they were lied to, and the ICAC's proved
that. It has taken you in the past 5 years to get anything off the ground, and then this one takes 24 hours. How is that okay?
So in terms of this, Katie, the ICAC has investigated the matter. The matter was referred to the ICAC by the Chief Minister, I understand. They've made a number of recommendations. There was no findings against any government minister.
Yeah, but they couldn't look into the Cabinet decision, could they? They could not go through those Cabinet documents. There's certain things that they weren't able to look at. Now, I think it's pretty disingenuous for the government to sort of say they looked into everything. You know, there's nothing untoward here for the government. When you go, well, hang on a second, they couldn't actually go through that Cabinet process and really nut out how this decision was actually made or what went in.
I mean, I've just explained that in the sense that it was when you get towards the end of the financial year, particularly with your infrastructure budget. And you need to remember at this point too, the government, because the economy was really lagging, we were putting a lot of infrastructure projects out there.
So we had 12 mil that wasn't allocated and hey, a grandstand looks good.
There was infrastructure grant projects that went out, and because we're very conscious of spending the infrastructure budget. And the closer we got, we realised some projects had been delayed and some projects had gone under. So we needed to get that out. So it was done as a grant, which is not uncommon to see grants going to incorporated associations, to city councils, etc., for at that time of the financial year.
How did it only take one day, though, Minister? One day for $12 million. It just seems strange that it's in the Chief Minister's electorate. He keeps coming out saying he didn't know about it and that he got lied to, and
then
he blames everybody else. The contradictory nature of this whole thing just stinks like a rat, and no one is taking responsibility for it. There is no leadership whatsoever. We've got the Chief Minister saying he's angry at the Turf Club, which is why
He said he's not. I heard that. He said he's just angry.
Like, well, he should be angry at himself.
He should be angry at himself for being a poor leader.
Angry that he got caught, maybe.
Also, though, I want to ask, all of you work in political offices. You've obviously got different level of staffing in each of those political offices. But to me, it seems pretty mind-blowing that, you know, that the Chief Minister would not know what his Chief of Staff was doing.
Katie, that, I think you've just hit the nail on the head. If he doesn't know, I mean, I get it, the Chief Minister, and same as Natasha is a minister for various portfolios, you can't know every intimate detail of what's going on in your office. That's why you have a Chief of Staff, Ministerial Advisors, etc. But for him not to know what his Chief of Staff was doing just beggars belief. They would have had the closest working relationship, which they'd had for some, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years prior. And Alf Leonardo is a very good Territorian and a hard worker. He would have known, and he would have kept someone in the loop. He wouldn't have operated in a vacuum. I just know it. It's not reality. Someone of that level and that stature would not have operated in a vacuum.
Realistically,
this is electorate of all things.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, where is this all going to land?
What I'd like to know is what is going to happen next. Who is responsible? Who does it go to the DPP? Like, what happens to that Chief of Staff? He's still working in the government.
It just said, the report said May. You know, that's a big word. May go to the DPP.
And so, I mean, Natasha, where, from your perspective, where is this going to go next?
Well, we're in, Oh, sorry, can I just jump in? Were any laws broken?
I don't know.
You know, like, if forget the fact that JTEX is co-owned by the chairman of the Turf Club. Push that aside. That's not a crime. JTEX got the contract. Mm. They'd audited it. They'd gone through scrutiny, they claim. That's not a crime. So has a law actually been broken?
What's the point of having an ICAC do lots of reports and recommendations if nothing happens, it just sits in someone's bottom drawer?
Well, I can't answer that. But the question, my question is, has a law or laws, plural, been broken?
So the ICAC's made 18 recommendations, as I understand, around this specific report, and we've given in-principle support to those. There's a number of actions that the Department of Trade, Business and Innovation have been asked to go away and act. We've called for the immediate resignation of the Turf Club board, and we've said that the $12 million will recruit those costs to the Territory taxpayer.
Yeah, well, but so, I mean, in terms of government, in terms of the Chief Minister, in terms of what has happened, obviously, from his office, I know that Alf Leonardi no longer works within his office now, obviously, but from your perspective, are you satisfied? Like, I mean, is the Cabinet all satisfied with the way in which this has happened? And do you feel comfortable and confident in the way in which the Chief Minister's managed this?
So the findings, of course, from the ICAC were disappointing, and that's why we've agreed in principle to the recommendations that were found and to put those in place, and as I just outlined, the other steps that we'll take.
So are you comfortable and confident with the way that this has been managed?
The process going forward, yes.
I feel like you're just trying to sweep it under the carpet and basically not take any responsibility. I mean, the first page of the ICAC report clearly says that ministers have clear oversight over all of this. I don't understand why you think that you're satisfied with it.
So as a government, we established the ICAC. It's disappointing that we need an ICAC in the Territory, but we need Territorians to have confidence that the taxpayer dollar is spent appropriately. The ICAC's made recommendations. We've agreed in principle. We've asked the departments to work through how we would implement those. We've also called for the Turf Club board to resign. And also the $12 million will be recouping that taxpayer dollars.
I mean, so you're still not taking responsibility yourself, though.
I think the Chief Minister's got form with asking people to resign. Like, he can do that. That's just platitudes. It doesn't really mean anything. Mm. And I think it was last week, Katie, or some other week, you read out obviously a letter that the legal people for the chairman have written to the Chief Minister and basically said, you're wrong, Chief Minister. Yep. You've told porkies yourself.
Well, that's exactly right. Like, it actually essentially...
So it's going to end up in court, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly how it seems. Like, it essentially, that's how that letter from Brett Dixon's legal team came across. I'm just trying to find that bit of information, but it did come across that, he enthusiastically supported the grandstand. So essentially we've got here last week, Brett Dixon's legal team wrote to the Chief Minister saying that his former Chief of Staff actively encouraged the application for the $12 million Northern Territory Government grant for the construction of a grandstand because it was enthusiastically supported by the Chief Minister.
And no doubt, we all know how legal people write, they wouldn't be writing that unless there's strong substance to it. So I think that there's going to be a legal battle somewhere in the future from the chairman's legal team. And I think squarely they're going to go for the Chief Minister because I think he's not telling the truth when it comes to his knowledge of this business. I mean, he also publicly said that, you know, he's going to refer the matter to ICAC, and that's fine. And he's said that on other occasions. He's referred the member for Blaine to ICAC. And yet he's quite happy to tell everyone that someone's going before ICAC. But if I tell someone that someone's going before ICAC, I get into trouble. So I think the Chief Minister is being a bit cute by half, as if that's the way to get rid of it. Let's just refer it to ICAC. Refer everything to ICAC, and then that way I don't have to deal with it anymore. Out of sight, out of mind. Well, that doesn't wash with Territorians, and it doesn't wash with people out there in voter land.
I mean, Farsi, are you happy with the way in which the Chief Minister's managed this?
So, Katie, it's a difficult situation, and we have seen a thorough investigation by the ICAC, more powerful than the investigation that the Department of Business, those questions that the Department of Business could ask. And I think it highlights to Territorians that if there is misappropriation around government taxpayer dollars, then it will be caught under this new process of the ICAC.
So despite this balls up, by the government, despite the balls up by Cabinet in terms of making this decision, and if we are to believe what's gone on, the Chief Minister has taken that submission himself to Cabinet. So despite all of that, despite a $12 million grandstand now being built in his electorate and him himself saying earlier in the week to me on the show that he wouldn't do this again, do you guys still have confidence in his decision-making processes?
Yes, and Katie, I think that's important. Racing is a big industry. It brings people to the Territory, and it brings dollars to the Territory, and there's a lot of good people in racing, and so that's why it's disappointing to see this, you know, overlaid, particularly as we head into the, you know, the Cup Carnival. And so, you know, I made it quite clear to you that I'm disappointed that the board hasn't resigned like they've been asked to, so that we can start afresh and let racing in the Territory, and particularly here in the top end, you know, people to have that public confidence in it.
And this is why it's so incredible that the Chief Minister is choosing not to go to the Race Carnival. I mean, it's our biggest event on our calendar. And Minister, you
it's
even
a whole
said,
month of Carnival.
That's right. This Minister also said she was still up in the air about whether she was going to go or not, depending on
what
happens.
Well, I made it quite clear around the Turf Club board. I don't think that I want to be endorsing the behaviours that have taken place.
It's not just about what you think and what the board thinks. It's also all of the Territorians, all the tourists that come up.
Businesses.
I mean, this is bigger than just one person.
We
should be there representing and advocating Territorians at the biggest event we have.
And you're quite correct. I'd call it the equine industry. The equine industry is massive in the Territory and everywhere. So it needs support of government.
360 is the week that was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
We did it. As of 1 p.m. today, we are lifting restrictions. That means from 1 p.m. you can take your masks off. You can go back to the gym. You can line up for a Luxa at the markets. And if you really want to celebrate, you can even hit the dance floor tonight at Monty's. Territorians, this is all down to you. You masked up when you had to, you kept your distance, you checked in over 1.2 million times in the last week alone. Thank you to 99.9% of you for being the best. Naturally, there were a few who weren't, but they've since been served a grilling from police and now thousands of dollars out of pocket. We came close. We could have been in a very different situation. From what started as just one case from Queensland, it quickly grew to 19. It spread across four jurisdictions. We had over 700 close contacts on the mine site who all locked down in the Tanami. I'm very pleased to say they've all had their final test and they are all negative, and they'll all be heading home and reuniting with loved ones tomorrow. Other close contacts at the Centre for National Resilience and the Todd facility have also returned their final tests. As you would have heard, two of those came back positive. This goes to show our lockdown has worked. We have the virus trapped, but also shows COVID is still very real. Multiple testing is necessary to ensure we keep the community safe. Since the first Tanami case, our health staff have processed over 25,000 tests. Our frontline workers have put in a mammoth effort. Because of them, businesses have been able to reopen. I also need to give a shout out, I won't get tired of doing this, to those Territorians who've gone out and got the vax. More than 17% of us are fully vaccinated. It's probably close to 18% now, which is a pretty sensational figure. We, as Territorians, are leading the country with the national rate at just 9%. In remote areas, we have 32% of Territorians vaccinated and 14% fully vaccinated. Bloody legends. Now, I said I will keep you safe. I would only go back to blowing things up when we were safe from the virus. And onto what I think most of you are waiting for. Territory Day, Firecracker Night. This year, it will be held on Sunday, August 29. Why this date? Let me explain. This Territory Day is our Freedom Day. And I promised one hell of a party. This year, as we celebrate our freedoms, Territory Day is linking arms with the annual Freedom Day Festival held in Kalkarindji on August 27 to 29. Freedom Day marks one of the pivotal events in the Territory and Australian history when Gurindji leader Vincent Lingiari led the August 1966 walk-off from Wave Hill Station. Vincent, as the head stockman at Wave Hill, took his people on a long journey for equal wages, better living conditions and dignity, but much more than that. This great Territorian set the stage for land rights in the Northern Territory and ultimately for national native title legislation. It is fitting that Territory Day 21 sees all Territorians come together with the Gurindji to honour Vincent and the legends of the walk-off, the freedoms they won for Aboriginal workers were freedoms for workers everywhere. I have with me...
Well, you are indeed listening to Mix 104.9's 360. And as you've just heard there from the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, those restrictions are lifting at 1 p.m. Farsi, you did your best to toe the line there and kind of just tell us that it was happening without directly telling us, but
That's
it is
right.
Definitely happening.
Well done to Territorians, Katie. I think that, you know, we our hearts go out to New South Wales and what's happening there.
Sure.
But Territorians really complied as soon as we publicly that we had cases. People identified themselves for contact tracing. They wore their masks. They stayed at home. They cancelled all their school holiday plans. And particularly to business, you know, that every business that shut their doors, tourism and hospitality, that during peak season, I was doing some live crosses, you know, in Parliament House in the evening and could see tourists just heading out for their little bit of exercise. And, you know, it obviously was really, really difficult, but it's shown that if we listen to our health officials and act early, we can get on top of it. And so I think that, you know, this weekend's for Territorians to celebrate.
Well, and talking of celebrating, we are going to be celebrating Territory Day a little bit later in the year, the 29th of August, is it, I think? Let me just double check my
Sunday, dates. Sunday the 29th of August, Katie. So
it's pretty late.
Events will take place across the Territory, those signature events that major events had organised in the urban areas. So, Katie, there was a couple of parameters.
Racing.
We were aiming
Horse
for
racing.
A Sunday evening. It's not on the cup weekend, Kezia.
that's
July.
The Chief Minister has just said that it's to coincide as well with Freedom Day.
So that's the Wave Hill walk-off. So that's the Freedom Day festival that's held acknowledging the events surrounding the Wave Hill walk-off. So, you know, particularly important for Territorians, but Indigenous Territorians. But there were some parameters. We're aiming for a Sunday. We needed a few weeks in terms of those events, organising them and locking them and getting them in place, and also allows businesses to make something of it and offer packages, and certainly know that the businesses that have ordered the fireworks in are ready to go. So that'll be exciting just a few weeks away.
There is a few people who are pretty concerned by that date in terms of the fire threat. I've got one here and it says, "Morning, Katie. Fireworks on Territory Day in July is always scary for rural folk, but to reschedule fireworks in August is just terrifying. How many people will have their property burned out this year? What about the poor fireys, and what will the expected damage to manage all the fires lit by our out of control fireworks? Move fireworks to the wet season or ban them altogether," says Sarah in Darwin River.
Katie, the reason that, and I agree with you, Sarah, the reason that it's worse in August is by August, September, October, the gamba grass is still green at the moment, but by August, September, it's dry, and it's a massive fuel load. The worst fires, or the worst fires that we usually get in our dry season, tend to be later in the dry season because of the fuel load and it's dry.
It would be interesting to know what situation that has caused the Chief Minister to actually have it on the 29th. Like, what is the reasoning that it is so far away?
Well, you know, like fireworks in the Northern Territory and probably around the rest of Australia historically was on the 5th of November to, you know, celebrate, if that's the word, Guy Fawkes trying to blow up the British Parliament. Now, why they celebrate, I'm not really sure, but that was towards the early part of, you know, the wet season. Fireworks then came on Self-Government Day, because when we got self-government, and that's what the government decided at the time, when we got self-government, which was on the 1st of July, let's celebrate it with fireworks. So,
but if the fireworks are here ready to be sold and Territorians have been anxiously waiting, why are we waiting so many weeks?
That's I'm a concern not sure. I've got, actually, for those, you know, for our fireworks retailers. I know that they were good, you know, obviously they were ready to go on the 1st. So they've now already got those retail spaces set up, and presumably all their fireworks there. What is the situation then for them? Because I understand, obviously, they'll have to have their fireworks into storage. But you think about then the rent that they're going to have to pay on some of those premises that they take on those short-term bases.
Because the fireworks will be
over
here
a
now.
Period of time. That's right.
They'll all be here.
It is going to be a costly exercise, I would assume, for those fireworks retailers.
So, I mean, obviously disappointing that we had to shift it from the 1st of July. No one wanted that, but we were in the middle of an outbreak here in the Territory, and that had to be done, as I just explained, in terms of the 29th, the detail that the Chief Minister just provided. I expanded a little bit on that, but also in terms of those events, we do organise those events. We did need a few weeks lead time on that. I mean, I guess, Katie, there would be conversation around any date that was picked, but it's exciting that there's a date. People can put it in their calendar and look forward to it in just a few weeks' time.
My other concern with the announcement this morning by the Chief Minister is that he has posted this on his social media Facebook page as a first point of call.
Yeah. I'm not into the Facebook updates in terms of announcements, I've got to say.
It's more serious than that, Katie.
Say what you really think, Wolfie.
Well, it's true. I just don't think that is how you should be communicating with Territorians.
But it's more serious than that. During the lockdown, the Chief Minister continued to make very important announcements on his Facebook page first as an official source of information, whereas really it should have gone on the NT health site,
it should
have gone on Secure NT, and then, of course, the media could have taken it from there. I was getting asked lots and lots of questions throughout that, and I would have to go to the Chief Minister's page to find the information. But worse than that even is that over the years, the Chief Minister and his media team have banned so many people from that page. So there are lots of Territorians who have previously commented about something that he didn't like being said.
And
he's
blocked
banned them, blocked them.
Yep.
And so those people did not know what was going on. And I think that is disgraceful.
But also,
I think it's a bit tacky.
There's a whole generation of people who don't actually go to Facebook to get their news. Now, I know that that might be difficult for the younger generation to comprehend.
But it's
true. Like, we have people throughout last week. We had people calling the station in droves. Ronnie was giving information and having to check on the COVID website as if she was a hotline for COVID. Like, honestly, there were so many phone calls coming through because a lot of that communication was mixed up. And I would agree with you, Marie-Claire. I think that realistically, when you're talking about things like COVID updates, we are in a pandemic. You don't make those updates. You don't make those official announcements on your Facebook page. I mean, it's really the Chief Minister's prerogative if he wants to then make that Facebook update or that news around Territory Day. That's entirely up to him. But I think when you're talking about official communication around a pandemic, you've got to do it the right way. It's got to be official.
What happened to the instantaneous media release? You press a button and it goes to all your emails, it goes to your phones, whatever. So it gets to all your media outlets across the Northern Territory, if not elsewhere. I just find it, as Marie-Claire said, I just find it a bit tacky. Of course, we all use social media and we get information out, but I'm not the Chief Minister of
the Northern
Territory Government.
We are going to have to take a very short break. You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is The Week That Was.
360's The Week That Was, thanks to the Silver Hebron, your local lawyers.
And The Week That Was now also broadcasting, of course, on 8HA in Alice Springs. And throughout the week, Will, I know that another ICAC report was indeed released, and the opposition is saying the Education Minister should end her silence and tell Territorians what she intends to do to counter theft and rorting at a remote school or at remote schools, as identified in the latest ICAC report. Now, we know the Shadow Minister for Education, Jo Hersey, said the Independent Commissioner Against Corruption's findings against the principal at the remote Millangimby School demanded a response and measures to ensure that there's no repeat at any Territory schools. I mean, I think it goes without saying that we're all thinking the same thing at this point.
Absolutely, Katie. I mean, where is the minister? This report was dropped quite a few days ago now. There's several allegations in there and evidence, actually, of this rorting that's gone on in these schools. And we haven't heard boo from any of the ministers, but in particular the education minister on this really important issue. I mean, you talk about giving Territorians confidence in an ICAC. This is the time. When the report is dropped and there is recommendations put forward, then get on social media, get on the news, and actually tell Territorians what is going to happen next.
Yeah, and one thing I want to stress about this, Katie, is there are a lot of senior executives who know that there's certain processes that have to be followed in regards to any school.
Yeah, I just can't understand how this has happened.
Okay, the ICAC report has found certain things, and I haven't read the report. They may have recommended certain things, and certain illegal activities may have taken place. However, these schools do not operate in a vacuum. The senior executives within the Department of Education would know there's certain processes that have to be followed in regards to funding and acquittal of funding and reporting and all that sort of stuff. That hasn't been done. So it's one thing to find the woman and her family not doing the right thing. But let's see, did the ICAC report talk about the processes that allowed this woman to do the things she's alleged to have done?
For many, many years.
That's right. So four years, wasn't it? You know, so what are those education executives been doing for the last 3 or 4 years?
Well, and this is a point that Jo Hersey makes in that press release that she sent out, and said that it is alarming that approximately $500,000 of public funding to educate some of the Territory's most disadvantaged children could be misappropriated, undetected, and with such apparent ease to ultimately ultimately increase the public funding available to be routed. You just really wonder.
Was no one paying attention to that school from head office?
So, Katie, my understanding is that the Department of Education have put out a statement on this matter and that they've said that all public servants and Department of Education employees are expected to adhere to the NT Public Service Code of Conduct, and the behaviour outlined in the report is not condoned, and that there's a number of recommendations which the department supports in principle that have been made in that report and will respond accordingly, and that some work is already underway in terms of these recommendations, because people, you know, this money needs to go to educating
children,
and particularly some of the most vulnerable children in isolated areas in Australia.
That's right. But Katie, you know, I've had issues in my electorate and a neighbouring electorate in regards to schools that executives within, they call it carpet land, somehow impose certain people into certain positions. Now, my school councils, one in particular, has fought tooth and nail to make sure you get the best person for the job in the school, and the schools don't get somehow overridden by executives within the department trying to put people into positions that are not suitable for that position. So I think there's more to this story than just this Millengimby school. And I think there really needs to be, as Marie Claire has said, the Minister for Education to come out with some kind of formal response, not only to this report, but how is it that the executives within the department didn't know that anything wrong was happening at
the
school?
Did the minister know anything
that was going on?
I mean, we have the chief minister that says that he doesn't know what's going on in his portfolios. You know, does the education minister know what's going on?
Maybe they've all got their head in the sand.
Well, look, I've got to say, you know, it's the ministers that should be. The ministers are elected by the people. Ministers need to know what's going on because you're elected by the people.
Buck stops at the top.
That's exactly
Minister
right.
keep saying the buck stops at the top. So maybe the buck stops at the top with him in regards to this matter, because after all, he is the chief minister. He's in charge of cabinet. He's in charge of all his ministers. So if the Minister for Education is not going to come out and say something in regards to this report, then perhaps he should be coming out and saying something.
Well, it's definitely silent, isn't it?
It is silent.
Well, look, we'll certainly put in the request to have the Minister for Education on. You know me, I'll always ask and always try my best to have people on the show.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
Now, there's been a lot of messages coming through on the text line this morning. I will make sure that we read all of those out throughout the morning. But we are going to have to wrap up. Before we do, though, it is my producer Ronnie's last day today.
Boo-hoo.
And she's been with us for nearly 2 years. It's been a phenomenal time. You know, it's been such a busy time. We broadcast our first ever live election debate with Ronnie producing the show. We've been through a pandemic. She's literally organised hundreds and hundreds of interviews.
Looked after you.
She looks after me.
That's
and
a
I
tricky
tell
job.
You what, sometimes that's the hardest part. But, you know, it goes without saying, for you guys that are in here most weeks as well, you know how much effort she puts in. So
she's
I do want to say a big thank
she's
you to Ronnie.
She's a great person.
She is.
She certainly does a great job, Katie. And, you know, sometimes we'll need to phone through to do the interview with you and the phone line will drop out and she just stays calm, and so we'll certainly miss her. Yeah. She's always
cheery,
always makes you feel good just before we have to speak to you, Wolfie, who might not make us feel so good.
It certainly is big shoes to fill, and I really
wishing her all the best.
Just as great.
All the best, Ronnie.
Well, that is it this morning for the week that was. Thank you so much for your company. I'll be back in the studio after 9 o'clock, down from the boardroom and into the studio after 10 o'clock, I should say. Thank you so much for your company, Natasha Files, Kezia Purick and Marie Claire Boothby, and we'll catch you again very soon.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you. You're listening to Mix 104.9's 360.